and welcome to Tesla's fourth quarter 2025 Q&A webcast. My name is Travis Axelrod, Head of Investor Relations, and I'm joined today by Elon Musk, Vaibhav Taneja, and a number of other executives. Our Q4 results were announced at about 3:00 P.M. Central Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question and answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please use the raise hand button to join the question queue. Before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thanks, Travis. So we've updated the Tesla mission to amazing abundance, and this is intended to send a message of optimism about the future. I think we're most likely headed to an exciting, amazing era of abundance. And I think with the advent or with the continued growth of AI and robotics, I think we actually are headed to a future of universal high income. Not universal basic income, but universal high income. I mean, there's gonna be a lot of change along the way, but that is what I see as the most likely outcome. So I think that it makes sense to update Tesla's mission to reflect that goal. And obviously, along that way, we're going to keep improving safety, driving down the cost of goods, and getting people access to anything they need without compromise, and still making sure that the environment is great, nature is great, and people can have whatever they want, which seems like probably the best future. So I'm open to other ideas, but that sounds like if you could say, what is the best future you could possibly imagine? I guess it would be that everyone can have whatever they want, including amazing medical care, but we still keep, you know, the beauty of nature and Earth. I think that's probably the best outcome. And we're seeing obviously the first steps along that way, this year for Tesla, first major steps, as we increase vehicle autonomy, and begin to produce Optimus robots at scale. We're making very, very big investments, so this is gonna be a very big CapEx year, as Vaibhav will get into. That is deliberate, because we're making big investments for an epic future. So I think all these investments make a lot of sense. We'll continue to make sure that when we do spend capital, it is spent very efficiently. But it's a lot of things. You know, major investments in batteries and the entire supply chain for batteries. So we're also gonna be significant manufacturers of solar cells, and we're making massive investments in AI chips. So, but I think these all make a ton of strategic sense. And then I guess I have, like, one, I guess, it's not exactly bad news, but it's time to basically bring the Model S and X programs to an end with an honorable discharge, because we're really moving into a future that is based on autonomy. And so if you're interested in buying a Model S and X, now would be the time to order it, because we expect to wind down S and X production in next quarter, and basically start production of Model S and X next quarter. We'll obviously continue to support the Model S and X programs for as long as people have the vehicles. But we're gonna take the Model S and X production space in our Fremont factory and convert that into an Optimus factory, which will, with the long-term goal of having 1 million units a year of Optimus robots in the current SX space in Fremont. So that is, I mean, slightly sad, but it's, But it is time to bring the SX programs to an end and shift really. It's part of our overall shift to an autonomous future. As my profile picture on X said for a few months there, the future is autonomous. So let's see, with respect to full self-driving and robotaxi, people are obviously following with very close attention the progress of FSD, and you can experience it for yourself. If you've got a Tesla, you notice with every software update, the car gets better and better at autonomy, we're able to do our first rides with no safety monitor in the car in Austin. These were paid rides, so these were just sort of randomly selected paid rides with no safety monitor, I think maybe yesterday or so, we don't even have a chase car or anything like that. So these are just cars with no people in them, and no one's following the car in Austin. So we obviously are being very cautious about this because we want to have no injuries or serious accidents along the way. So I think it makes sense to be very cautious, but you'll see the amount of autonomy increase dramatically, I think, every month, essentially. So, then there will also be an opportunity, something we've talked about for a long time, for existing owners of Teslas to add or subtract their cars to the fleet, kind of like how Airbnb works, where you can add or subtract your house to the Airbnb inventory. And I think probably the value of the Tesla, the sort of partial people adding or subtracting their cars to the Tesla autonomous fleet is probably a little underweighted by a lot of people, because we've got millions of cars with AI4 that can do this. So, I think it will provide an opportunity for a lot of customers to earn more by lending their car to the fleet than their lease cost to Tesla. Which is kind of like you get in that scenario, you basically get paid to own a Tesla. It's quite a good scenario. We expect to have fully autonomous vehicles in probably, I don't know, somewhere between a quarter and half of the United States by the end of the year, pending regulatory approval. A big factor would be if there's some kind of federal preemption for autonomous vehicles. In the absence of that, you kind of have to go on a city-by-city or state-by-state basis. But nonetheless, even if it is city-by-city, state-by-state, we expect to be in dozens of cities, dozens of major cities by the end of the year. With respect to energy, the Tesla energy team has done incredible work, and the growth rate on that is continuing to be very strong, and we're building more manufacturing capacity, and expect that and energy will have very high growth for really as far into the future as we can imagine. The solar opportunity is underestimated. We think the best way to add significant capability to the grid is, or not to the grid, let's say it's powering AI data centers, is solar and batteries on Earth and solar in space. So that's why we're going to work towards getting 100 gigawatts a year of solar cell production, integrating across the entire supply chain from raw materials all the way to finished solar panels. Maybe a bit more about Optimus. we'll probably unveil Optimus 3 in a few months. I think it's going to be quite surprising to people. It's an incredibly capable robot. And as I mentioned, we're replacing the SX line in Fremont with a million unit per year line of Optimus. Now, because it is a completely new supply chain, there's really nothing from the existing supply chain that exists in Optimus. Everything is designed from physics first principles. So that means the normal S curve of manufacturing ramp will be longer for Optimus than it is for products that have at least some portion of an existing supply chain. Like when everything's new, the production rate will be proportionate to the least lucky, least confident part of the entire supply chain. And if there's 10,000 things that need to go right, it only takes one to be slowed to lag that. But so it will be sort of a stretched out S curve. But I'm confident that we'll get to a million units a year of in Fremont of Optimus 3. This Optimus 3 really will be a general purpose robot that can learn by observing human behavior. So you can like demonstrate a task or literally verbally describe a task or show it a task, even show it a video, and it will be able to do that task. So it's going to be a very capable robot. I think long-term Optimus will have a very significant impact on the U.S. GDP. Like it will actually move the needle on U.S. GDP significantly. So in conclusion, there's still obviously many who doubt our ambitions for creating amazing abundance, but we're confident it can be done and we're making the right moves technologically to ensure that it does. And Tesla's obviously never been a company to shy away from solving some of the hardest problems. I think that's kind of how you build value in a company, is you solve hard problems. It's like, I don't know how you create value by solving easy problems. So there's a lot of hard problems that the Tesla team is going to solve, but it's an incredibly talented, hardworking team. I'd like to thank actually everyone at Tesla for their incredible hard work. And it's an honor to work with such a talented group. So thank you to everyone who is supporting this mission. The future is more exciting than you can imagine.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Elon. And next we have some remarks from Vaibhav. Go ahead.
Thanks, Travis. So Q4 25 was an interesting quarter in a couple of respects. On the autos front, while in Q3 we saw a surge in U.S. demand before the IRA consumer credit cliff, pulling in some demand from Q4. In other parts of the world, we saw increase in demand leading to record deliveries in smaller countries like Malaysia, Norway, Poland, Saudi Arabia, and Taiwan, while continued strength in the rest of APAC and EMEA. We therefore ended 2025 with a bigger backlog than in recent years. Note that none of these countries have the latest version of FSD supervised available yet. On the storage front, we hit yet another record in terms of deployments. I would like to thank our customers and Tesla in continuing this momentum. On the automotive margins front, automotive margins excluding credits improved sequentially from 15.4% to 17.9%. The automotive gross profit was flat sequentially despite 16% lower deliveries, primarily due to regional mix as we had proportionately more deliveries in APAC and EMEA. As we look to 2026, with the progress that has been made with autonomy, our focus is on ramping production at all our factories. Our biggest constraint globally continues to be on the battery pack front. While our teams have been creative in trying to resolve the situation by now putting 4680 cells in non-structural packs, we continue to iterate improving things from here on. FSD adoption continued to improve in the quarter, reaching nearly 1.1 million paid customers globally. Of these, nearly 70% were upfront purchases. It is important to note that beginning this quarter, we are transitioning fully to a subscription-based model for FSD. Therefore, net additions to this figure will primarily be via subscription model and in the short term will impact automotive margins. On the energy front, we achieved yet another record in terms of gross profit for the quarter and ended the year with nearly $12.8 billion in revenue, a 26.6% year-over-year growth. This was the result of high deployments in all regions and continued strength in demand for both Megapack and Powerwall. As we look at 2026, our backlog remains strong, well-diversified globally, and we expect increasing deployments with the launch of Megapack 3 and Megablock. However, we expect margin compression from the increased low-cost competition, impacts to market from policy uncertainty, and the cost of tariffs. Services and others margin declined from 10.5% to 8.8%, primarily from higher employee-related costs for service centers as we start preparing for the ramp in activity from the growth in the fleet size. We did see a momentum in margin. We did see an improvement in margin from our supercharging business, which is included within services and other. Additionally, note that our robotaxi business-related costs, while not material, are also included within this. Given that this, we're still in the early phase of our fleet deployment and are still doing a lot of validation testing, the revenue and cost per mile metrics are not meaningful to discuss at the moment. Then on total gross margin front, you know, we ended the quarter with over 20.1%, something which we haven't achieved for over the last 2 years. This improvement came despite the impact of lower fixed cost absorption and the impact of tariffs, which were in excess of $500 million in Q4. Operating expenses increased sequentially, primarily from increased stock-based compensation for employees, and as we started recording charges on for one operational milestone under our 2025 CEO Performance Award that was deemed to be probable over the award term. Additionally, our spend on AI-related initiatives and new products like CyberCab, Semi, Optimus, and Megaprac, et cetera, continues to be at elevated levels, and we expect this trend to continue for the full year 2026. Net income was negatively impacted from mark-to-market charges on a Bitcoin holding, which depreciated 23% as compared to the last quarter, and the impact of unfavorable impact of FX, primarily from our large intercompany borrowings. On the free cash flow front, we ended up at $1.4 billion. You know, we did end up CapEx being slightly below our previous guidance of $9 billion. But like as Elon already mentioned, this year is going to be a huge investment year from a CapEx perspective. And at the moment, we're expecting that CapEx would be in excess of $20 billion. You know, we'll be paying for six factories, namely the refinery, LFP factory, CyberCab, Semi, a new mega factory, the Optimus factory. On top of it, we'll also be spending money for building our AI compute infrastructure, and we'll continue investing in our existing factories to build more capacity. And then, you know, also the related infrastructure along with it. And we'll also further expand our fleet of Robotaxi and Optimus. While this may seem a lot, we believe this is the right strategy to position the company for the next era. And we'll make such investments, as Elon mentioned, in a very capital-efficient manner. Note that this does not include potential investments in solar cell manufacturing or our TerraFab, as we're still in early phase, and we plan to provide an update in future quarters. We're starting not the next chapter, but a new book on the progression of this company. 2026 year would be when all of this began. While at times it feels daunting, it is going to be the most exciting change in Tesla's history, and we could not have even dreamed of embarking on this journey without the support of our customers and our investors. Thanks for again showing the confidence in us, and let's get ready for a future of amazing abundance. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much, Vaibhav. Now we're going to head over to investor questions. As always, we will start with questions from Say.com. The first question is, today there are approximately 90 million cars sold globally each year. Does Tesla have a view, based on its robotaxi ambition, what this number will be in 5 or 10 years? And how does this impact Tesla's EV strategy to have more models?
Yeah, thanks, Travis. As Elon said, the future is autonomous, and obviously autonomy and cybercab are going to change the global market size and mix quite significantly. I think that's quite obvious. You know, general transportation is going to be better served by autonomy as it will be safer and cheaper. And over 90% of vehicle miles traveled are with two or less passengers now, which is why we designed cybercab that way. In this new autonomous market, we at Tesla have the advantage of efficiency, cost, and manufacturing at scale that really no one else has. And we've built that over the last decades. And we believe that that segment that we are creating will grow millions year over year.
Just to add to what Lars said there, the point that Lars made, which is that 90% of miles driven are with one or two occupants, essentially, is a very important one, because that implies that the cyber cab, which is a dedicated, you know, two-seater dedicated robotaxi. It's a little confusing with the terms robotaxi and cybercab. Sorry about the confusion. But and in fact, in some states, we're not allowed to use the word cab or taxi. So it's going to get even more strange. It's going to be like cyber vehicle or something, cybercar. But the cybercab, which is a specific vehicle model that we're making, does not have a steering wheel or pedals. So this is clearly, you know, there's no fallback mechanism here. It's like this car either drives itself or it does not drive. And we expect to start production in April. As always, it's an S-curve of, the production rate is an S-curve, so it starts off very slowly and then grows exponentially. Then you hit the linear and then ultimately, it asymptotes at whatever your target volume is. So, we would expect over time to make far more cybercabs than all of our other vehicles combined. Given that 90% of distance driven or distance traveled exactly, no longer driving, is one or two people. I think it's like 80% is just one. So it would mean that long-term cybercab would make several times more cybercabs per year than all of our other vehicles combined.
Great. Thank you so much. The next question, a bit related, are there still plans to launch new models to address different price segments and vehicle types, which could materially expand the TAM for Tesla?
Yeah. To further on what we were just talking about, we've launched our least expensive models ever over the last few months and are continuing to expand those models globally. And over the last decade, we have continually brought down the cost of our vehicles without sacrificing range, performance, or premiumness. And we'll continue to do that, as Vaibhav said, investing in our factories. But these are all trade-offs of where we spend our time or money. And to Elon's point just now, with Cybercab coming, we are aiming to bring that Tesla premium ride experience to our largest market yet. That could be 5 or 10 times our current levels of production. This new autonomous market, you have to start thinking about us as moving to providing transportation as a service more than the total addressable market for the purchased vehicles alone. And of course, we do have plans to have robotaxis in various shapes and sizes, but obviously Cybercab will be the grand majority of that volume.
Yeah, the vast majority of miles traveled will be autonomous in the future. I would say probably less than 5% of miles driven will be where somebody's actually driving the car themselves in the future, maybe as low as 1%.
Great. The next question is, historically, Tesla has spoken about gross margin per model. Are there standalone gross margin targets for the current models, excluding the benefits for FSD sales?
You know, we've talked about this with the previous two questions, but transportation, as we know, is changing. And I think we cannot keep applying the same framework from a car sales model to the future, what we are trying to do. So it has to be looked at it more holistically. You know, autonomy software will be the driver for growth from now on. And as we aim to maximize the global fleet, we have been laser focused on COGS from our side to make sure, because that is something which we manage. So we will keep focusing on that, but I think we need to look at it from a different dimension.
Yeah, like this CyberCab, the whole design of CyberCab was to optimize the fully considered cost per mile of autonomous driving. And it's a different design problem than if you're trying to design cars for people who will be driving versus being driven. So CyberCab is, like I said, super optimized for minimum cost per mile and also for a much higher duty cycle. So it would expect CyberCab to be used, probably 50 or 60 hours a week instead of the 10 or 11 hours a week that a driven vehicle is used. So, typically people might drive their car for an hour and a half a day on average, so it's like 10 hours per week out of 168. I think an autonomous vehicle is likely to be used probably five times as often, which means that you need to design the vehicle for a much more wear and tear per unit of time and much more resilience. It's more like a commercial truck that's in continuous operation or close to continuous operation is how you design an autonomous vehicle. And so we will have larger vehicles in the CyberCab in the future that are designed for full autonomy. We've actually shown pictures of this and, in fact, have shown prototypes. So this is not exactly a secret. In fact, we've given people rides in them. So, we're not keeping this, hiding this light under a bushel here. It's like we're literally saying what we're going to do and have said what we're going to do for a while. I think long-term really the only vehicles that we'll make will be autonomous vehicles, with the exception of the next generation Roadster, which we're hoping to debut in April. Hopefully. It's going to be something out of this world.
Fantastic. The next question we'd unfortunately have to skip because it's not related to Tesla. And we would like to remind folks who use the Say platform to please focus these questions on Tesla. So with that in mind, we're going to move on to the next question, which is, what is the current bottleneck to increased robotaxi deployment and personal use unsupervised FSD? The safety and performance of the most recent models, is it the safety and performance of the most recent models, or is it people to monitor the robotaxis in car or remotely, or is there some other blocker? I don't know, Ashok, if you wanted to kick off on this one.
Yeah, we have scaled the robotaxi service that's available to customers over the last year in order to just learn the scaling problems without having to wait for the unsupervised. Basically, like two goals. One is like learn as much as possible from the fleet with the safety monitors. And secondly, be laser focused with the engineering team to solve the unsupervised FSD problem. I think we did both. Like by the end of last year, we had a long tail of issues that we were able to churn through. And then in the last couple of weeks, we had started our unsupervised robotaxi service to public customers in Austin. I think some customers took rides last week, and also the service continues today without any rear car or something like that. Separately, we did scale the fleet size in the Bay Area and in Austin. And through that, we learned issues with charging and other issues that we would have seen once we scale the unsupervised fleet. So both are happening in parallel. A variant of the software that's used for the robotaxi service was shipped to customers with V14, and customers saw a huge jump in performance, like a lot of happy feedback from customers. So since then, we have improved the software significantly as well. And customers will continue to see with their own software releases that the software is so good that, you know, they're like screaming to remove the driver monitoring software because they're bored inside the car too much.
Adding to that a little bit with what Ashok said about learning about our charging and service needs, you know, we're using our vast network of charging and service centers that really only Tesla has in this space to jumpstart our infrastructure build-out needs to get ahead of robotaxi and autonomous vehicle demand. And we expect that because of this network, we are the only company capable of scaling at the rate that is needed for the tsunami of autonomy that is coming.
Yeah.
Great. Moving on to the next question. After the unveil of the Cybertruck, Elon stated that if it didn't sell well, Tesla would build a more conventional-looking pickup. How practical would it be to create this new design on the Cybertruck architecture, and could it be conveniently built on the existing production lines?
Actually, in its segment, Cybertruck continues to be a leader and is selling more than any other electric truck out there, while our competition continues to pull back. But to the question itself, from a line standpoint, we always design our lines to be super flexible. We built 3 and Y on the same line. We built S and X on the same line still, showing that we can do that. The Cybertruck line was designed in the same way and is one of our most fully ready for autonomy platforms.
Yeah. We will transition the Cybertruck line to just a fully autonomous line. And there's obviously a market there for cargo delivery, like you say, like localized cargo delivery within within a city, within a few hundred miles, something like that. There's a lot of cargo that needs to move locally within a city, and an autonomous Cybertruck could be very useful for that.
Great. Moving on to the next question. Regarding Optimus, could you share the current number of units deployed in Tesla factories and actively performing production tasks? What specific roles or operations are they handling, and how has their integration impacted factory efficiency or output?
I mean, we're still very much at the early stages of Optimus. It's an R&D, still in the R&D phase. We have had Optimus do some basic tasks in the factory, but as we iterate on new versions of Optimus, we deprecate the old versions, and so it's not in usage in our factories in a material way. It's more so that the robot can learn. We wouldn't expect to have any kind of significant Optimus production volume until probably the end of this year.
Great.
Optimus Gen 3 is an awesome robot that
it is awesome.
It's an awesome robot that minimizes any differences. It looks like a human. People could be easily confused that it's a human. And this helps our strategy for the AI too, because you can learn from how humans do these tasks, and it's very easy to teach the robot to do in the same way as opposed to previous robots.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one thing I should say, there's a lot of news of various companies announcing layoffs and whatnot. But at our Tesla, factory in Fremont, we actually expect to increase headcount over time. And to significantly increase output from our factories, so we don't have any layoff plans. We expect to actually increase headcount.
Great. The next question, similar to the other autonomy questions, but slightly different. When is FSD going to be 100% unsupervised?
Well, it is 100% unsupervised in. FSD is 100% unsupervised. I mean, we obviously have cars operating with no one in them and no safety monitor and no follow car or anything like that in Austin right now. For customers, we're being just very cautious with the rollout. I mean, with each successive version, as we prove it out and we make sure that there are no sort of unique issues in particular cities, because like sometimes you get like some very difficult intersection, and it'll be an intersection where a lot of humans have accidents. By the way, there's like some pretty nutty intersections where there are a lot of humans make mistakes and have accidents in various cities. So we want to make sure that FSD can handle those unusual intersections. Like if you take LA, for example, where Wilshire and Santa Monica combine is like there's about, I don't know, 20 traffic lights. And people are constantly having accidents there. So you want to make sure that FSD can handle unique things in a particular city. And we're also just being paranoid about safety. But with each successive release of FSD, we will reduce the amount of driver monitoring that's needed proportionate to the safety of the FSD build.
Great. As it relates to RoboTaxi, what has surprised you about the rollout so far? We've talked about what's constrained the fleet expansion to date, but it appears there are 200 vehicles based on public tracking. Is that something that we can confirm?
I wouldn't say there's anything that really surprised us because we had a large fleet, we had all the metrics, so there was not sort of a surprise. It was just continued work to grind down on the long tail of issues, and that's what enabled us to launch the unsupervised service in Austin.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of RoboTaxi vehicles carrying paid customers, I think we're well over 500 at this point between the Bay Area and Austin.
Varying amounts of like vehicles depending on the load, but yeah, you can have like more vehicles doing like peak times and then like fewer vehicles in the off hours.
Yeah. But this will probably, you know, double every month type of thing. It's on an exponential curve.
I mean, one other thing people forget that, you know, we've been deliberate on all this in the sense that we have the supporting infrastructure already been in place, whether it's service centers, charging. Yes, we'll have to augment as the fleet grows, depending upon the density of where the demand is and whatnot. But it's not something like we just stumbled upon it and we're starting to. We've been at it for years. Yes, not every city is designed the same way. Same thing, our infrastructure is also not the same in every city. But you have to give us credit that it's been a journey. And like Lars said, if there's some company which can do it, we've already been at it, so we should be able to deliver much better.
Great. The next question is about chase cars, which we already covered. So moving on to the last question. Elon, you've been spending significant personal time on Tesla's chip design.
Yeah.
What was the forcing function behind this increased involvement? And do you think external chip sales will represent a significant portion of Tesla's valuation by the end of the decade?
Well, I mean, I tend to spend time on whatever the most critical issue is for the company, and completing the AI5 chip design and having it be a great chip is arguably the number one most critical thing to get done, which is why I'm spending more time on that than currently anything else at Tesla. Spend pretty much every Saturday on this and a chunk of every Tuesday. So it's like a, you know, if I'm spending my Saturdays on something, it's going to be something pretty important. I do think AI5 will be a very good chip, and I feel quite confident about the design at this point. And then AI6, which will follow that, it'll aspirationally follow that in under a year, will be yet another big leap beyond AI5. So I feel pretty good about our chip strategy right now. But in terms of selling it outside of Tesla, we first need to make sure we have enough chips for all of our vehicle production and all of our Optimus production, and then we will actually use the AI5 chips in our data centers. We already use the AI4 chips in our data centers, so when we do training, it's a combination of the AI4 chips and NVIDIA hardware primarily that we do training with. So. But you say by the end of the decade, I mean, that's like, things are changing so fast that it's hard to imagine like what happens at the end of the decade. I mean, we might. I mean, when I look ahead at say what's the limiting factor for Tesla growth, if you go say 3 or 4 years out, I think it actually is chip production. Is there enough AI logic and enough AI and enough memory, enough RAM for our volume? And right now, I see that as being the thing that probably limits our growth in 3 or 4 years, which would imply that we're not selling chips outside of Tesla because we need them. In fact, I think I think it's going to make sense, and this is definitely going to be a sort of a controversial thing, but I think Tesla needs to build a Terafab. You know, I mentioned this at the shareholder meeting, but even when we look at the output of the best case output of all of our key suppliers, and I would say even they're beyond suppliers, they're like strategic partners, like Samsung, TSMC, and Micron. And we say, like, what's the most you could possibly make? then it's not enough. I think in order to remove the constraint, the probable constraint in 3 or 4 years, we're going to have to build a Tesla Terafab, a very big fab that includes logic, memory, and packaging domestically. That's actually also going to be very important to ensure that we are protected against any geopolitical risks. I think people may be underweighting some of the geopolitical risks that are going to be a major factor in a few years. So now, you know, a lot of people will say that's crazy. Fabs are really hard. I'm like, yes, I know fabs are really hard. I don't think they're easy.
We do hard things.
We do a lot of hard things. You know, we didn't used to have car factories. We didn't used to have battery cell factories or lithium refineries or, mega pack factories or, all these other things. We figured it out. So I think it's... I think if we don't do the Tesla Terafab, we're going to be limited by a supplier output of chips, and I think maybe memory is an even bigger limiter than AI logic. So for example, we have chip supply deals with TSMC in Arizona and Samsung in Texas, but currently there are no advanced memory fabs at scale in the United States. There are zero, literally zero. Hopefully, Micron will have something going in a few years because they're all headquartered in Idaho, where they make a lot of potato chips, but we need to make computer chips too. We're working with our strategic partners on the chip front, memory and logic. But I think we got to also try our hand at building a large scale fab that integrates logic, memory, and packaging. And if we don't do that, we're just going to be fundamentally limited by supply chain, especially if there's some in a worst case geopolitical situation, it would be quite a severe situation. So I think quite frankly, it'd be crazy not to try the Terafab. So,
great.
We'll have a bigger announcement on this in the future.
Awesome. With that, we're going to move on to analyst questions. The first analyst is Emmanuel from Wolfe Research. Emmanuel, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Great, thank you so much. It's Emmanuel Rosner from Wolfe Research. My first question is on the CapEx. You signal a pretty large increase to over $20 billion for this year. Was hoping to better understand where the investments are going. Any way to dimension for us which of the product line or technologies account for the bulk of the increase? And also, do you view this as like one time in nature, 2026? Or I guess how much of this is an ongoing level of high spending for a number of years? And then just finally still on that, with that level of spending, you're going to be burning cash. How should we think about cash balance or any other way to finance this?
Yeah, so, yeah, Emmanuel, I tried to put this in my opening remarks too, but I'll try and go a little bit deeper. There's about six factories which we are starting production in this year. So there's a lot of cash, CapEx, which is going into that. Then as we are trying to scale Optimus, we need a lot more compute. So we're putting more money towards compute as well.
And so then for training.
For training.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to be spending money to expand the capacity at, you know, at existing factories. On top of it, you know, we're just keep in mind that we're not, none of these numbers which I shared of 20 billion factors in anything to do with the solar fab or the semiconductor chip fab. Those would be, as Elon mentioned, would come later on. And you think your second part of your question was, is this one-off or would we expect more? I think we're getting into this investment phase because we have big aspirations. And when you look at it, some of these aspirations are, I call them as infrastructure play, especially if you have to do a chip fab and we have to do a solar cell manufacturing fab. Those are infrastructure plays. And that funding takes a little bit longer. And you would be in an investment cycle for a little bit longer. Initially, third part of your question was, how are we going to fund it? Initially, obviously, we have over $44 billion of cash and investments on the books. So we'll use our internal resources. But there are ways where we can fund it, especially when we look at the robotaxi fleet. Because, you know, anytime you have a consistent stream of cash flow, you can go and get money from the banks. And we have had conversations with banks about it. And that is something how we're going to do it. And then on the infrastructure play side, yeah, like I said, we don't have a number yet. But given that it's an infrastructure play, it's a longer tail, we will have to look at a little bit more in terms of how we fund it, whether it's through more debt or other means.
Great. Our next question comes from Andrew from Morgan Stanley. Andrew, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Great. Thanks so much for taking the question. I just want to start on the xAI investment that you guys announced today. You know, you talked about there being some collaboration, you know, between the companies. So I'm just hoping to get more information or if you're hoping you could shed more light on what that looks like and maybe how the work xAI is doing can be leveraged at Tesla and vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at the disclosure, which we also put in there, we do talk about this is literally a furtherance of our Master Plan 4. And even today, if you look at Tesla vehicles, we are using Grok in there. And as we look at things, whether we can do it ourselves, yes, there are a lot of things which we can do ourselves. But if there are things which xAI can help accelerate our progress, then why should we not do that? And that is the reason why we've gone ahead with such an investment, because this is part of the strategic initiative. Because as it is, if you remember, I talked about how many things which we're doing ourselves. If there are ways and means we can find efficient ways for others to help us, and xAI literally fits into that mold, so that's why we went ahead with it.
And we just had like a lot of investors ask us to do this. There was like a lot of investor Tesla shareholders said like we should invest in XAI. So that's like we're just doing what shareholders like asked us to do pretty much. But Grok will be, I think very helpful in say maximizing the efficiency of the management of a large autonomous fleet. So I mean, if you've got an autonomous fleet that's, in the future, 10 million vehicles or tens of millions of vehicles, then optimizing the efficient use of that fleet, Grok will be, I think, way better than any heuristic solution, or sort of manually managed solution. And if you say you're managing, a large team of Optimus robots to build a factory or build a refinery, say a rare hypothetical, a rare earth ore refinery, which we do desperately need in America, then you say, well, what's going to organize the Optimus robots to build that ore refinery? That would, you need an orchestra conductor. And so then Grok would be kind of the orchestra conductor for the Optimus robots to build the hypothetically and rare. It might not be hypothetical in the future. I'm just saying it's not currently on our plans. But we do need a lot more ore refining capacity in the U.S. So then what's going to manage? Let's say 1,000 Optimus robots to do.
You're on mute right now, so I'm not sure if you're trying to ask a follow-up question. Ready.
We're going to move on to the next question, which is coming from Dan Levi at Barclays. Dan, please feel free.
Great. Thank you. Elon, you talked about some of the constraints on memory. Given the very tight supply, are there any near-term constraints on procuring memory? And if there are, to what extent could you look at modifying the functionality in the vehicle, similar to what you did in 21 when we saw shortages on MCUs? And maybe how are you thinking about bridging in the next few years?
Well, the Tesla AI is very compute efficient and very memory efficient. So I think one of the metrics one should consider for any given AI model is the intelligence per gigabyte, especially when you're constrained on RAM. Having an AI that has very high intelligence density per gigabyte, so you can say for a given number of gigabytes, how much functionality can you get out of it? I actually think Tesla is ahead of the rest of the world in intelligence density of AI by an order of magnitude or more. This is going to sound like a pretty bold statement, but I kind of know what the intelligence efficiency of the big models are, like Grok, and a bunch of the other models, and I Tesla's AI is like, in terms of its memory efficiency, I think more than an order of magnitude better. So that puts us in a pretty good position, actually, for scaling. And we do have a solution for logic and memory for, let's say, the next roughly 3 years. But if you start going beyond 3 years and we look at the scaling plans and how many fabs are getting built, and especially if you factor in geopolitical uncertainty, there's always risk that maybe those chips don't arrive that people were expecting to arrive. So that's why I think we need to have more fab capacity in the U.S. Just in case chips don't stop arriving for any reason. This is really existential for Tesla, because if Optimus is completely useless without an AI chip. It's not like you know, at least the cars we can put steering wheels and pedals in, or retrofit them if need be. But Optimus is just a mannequin without, you know, it's like the Tin Man or whatever from the Wizard of Oz. But even worse, at least the Tin Man could walk. Optimus won't even be able to. Or just sit there without an AHF. So we've got a good solution for a significant scale through, you know, for the next roughly 3 years. Beyond that, we will be supplier limited, and so we've got to figure out some game plan to not be supplier limited.
Great. Our next question is going to come from George at Canaccord. George, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. So, yeah, there's been a surge of startups, particularly from China, entering the humanoid market, and wondering what the long-term competitive advantages that keep Tesla ahead are, and how, based on what you've seen, will Optimus fundamentally differ from these competitors? Thank you.
Well, I do think that by far the biggest competition for humanoid robots will be from China. China is incredibly good at scaling manufacturing, actually quite good at AI, as you can see from, you know, the open source, or not the open source, but the sort of, I guess some of them are open actually, but basically the models that China is distributing for free are actually quite good, and they keep getting better. So China is very good at AI, very good at manufacturing, and will definitely be the toughest competition for Tesla. To the best of our knowledge, we don't see any significant competitors outside of China, China will definitely be tough competition. There's no two ways about it. I always think like people sort of outside of China kind of underestimate China. China's an ass kicker next level. So, you know, I guess, you know, we're going to build. We think Optimus will be much more capable than any robot that we are aware of under development in China. So we think we'll be ahead in terms of the real world intelligence, the electromechanical dexterity, especially the hand design, which is by far the hardest thing in the robot. And in fact, I'd say there's really three hard things about humanoid robots: building an incredible hand that has the same degrees of freedom and dexterity as a human hand is an incredibly difficult engineering challenge. Then there's the real world AI and scaling production. Those are the three hardest problems by far for humanoid robots. I think Tesla is the only company that actually has all three of those components.
Great. And our last question is going to come from Colin at Oppenheimer. Colin, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Thanks so much. Guys, you know, you talked a lot about the CapEx spend, but, you know, this is an incredibly ambitious technology development program that you're talking about. Can you talk a little bit about the R&D spend and how you're thinking about the synergies of the different components, you know, particularly on the hardware side? You know, if you think about, you know, batteries into chips, into memory and the efficiency of the system, and what sort of advantages you think you'll end up getting out of, you know, some of these purpose-built devices that you'll end up integrating into multiple end markets.
Well, really all we're trying to do is make sure that we can scale to very high volume with autonomous vehicles, with humanoid robots, and that we address geopolitical risk, which I think, you know, there's so many companies out there that are asleep at the switch with regard to geopolitical risk. Or they just have their head in the sand and hope nothing bad will happen. I'm way more paranoid than that. I always think of Andy Grove's famous statement, "Only the paranoid survive." And why did he come up with that statement at Intel? Let's think. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that statement. So we're going to be paranoid and make sure that we can continue to build batteries and robots and AI chips no matter what happens. And companies that don't do that, a bunch of them will cease to exist.
Yeah, I mean, remember, all this comes out of necessity. It's not that we want to do it. It's just we have no choice.
Yeah, I mean, we built the most advanced lithium refinery in the world, by the way. It's not just, like, our lithium refinery in Corpus Christi is not just a copy of what others have done. It's an entirely new process that is fundamentally more efficient and more advanced than anything else in the world. The same is true of our cathode refinery here in Austin. And we wish others would build this. Can other people please, for the love of God,
help?
The name of all that is holy. Can others please build this? Build this stuff.
It's not the first time you've asked.
Exactly. I mean, this is not the first time you've said something like this.
Like, why do we have to build these things? Why can others not also? Please, can some others build these things? I mean, it's very hard to build these things. And we build them out of desperation. Not because nobody else is building lithium refineries and cathode refineries. We're pretty much the not just the largest, but also the only lithium refinery and cathode refinery in America. So we're making moves to make sure that no matter what happens, Tesla will prosper.
Great. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for Q&A today. We really appreciate everyone's questions, and we look forward to talking to you next quarter. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
All right. Hey, everybody. Just going to turn the microphone up here, make sure that's all good. We can go through some key points from the call. As well as just earnings in general today. So let me know if the audio is good. Looks like it should be. I would like to give it a second here, though, as we switch over. We green because audio is good. That would be the Tesla earnings audio. But let me know if my audio is also green. All right, looks good. Cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. As mentioned there, nice to see the really nice to see the Greg, thank you. I really appreciate that super chat. That's awesome. Thanks, Greg. So first off, yeah, nice to see the improved audio quality. It made understanding the points that were being made a lot easier. So kudos to Tesla for that. That's really nice to see, and hopefully will be the case going forward. So awesome update there. Other major updates from this call though. I think probably Well, we can kind of go sequentially, I think. So Model S and X discontinued. That is unfortunate, you know, for those consumers of those vehicles. It was a product that someday I would have maybe considered buying, you know, especially the Model X. It's a bummer to see those go away. It's also not terribly surprising. This has been, Elon has alluded to this and mentioned this as a possibility for years. When you were already kind of considering that, and then if you look at the other vehicle deliveries and how that's trended, you know, quarter over quarter, year over year, etc., for the last couple of years, you can see that these aren't you know, doing super strong in terms of the demand and the production volume necessitated, particularly after Model 3 and Model Y were introduced and obviously became so successful, really ate into a lot of the market that S and X were in. So at this point, I think Tesla, not necessarily looking for an excuse to get rid of them, but I think that, hey, we've got the space that we could put to use for Optimus. This is probably something that kind of makes sense to do anyway. So let's go ahead and, you know, make this change. But it is sad, especially like Model S, where all of this started. I guess you'd go back to the Roadster before that. But sort of Model S was the car that I think really put Tesla on the map. Whether you want to argue that was Model S or Model 3, it's pretty much definitely one of those two vehicles. So it is, you know, worth mourning, but also just appreciating the massive success that has come from that vehicle, and obviously from the earliest days of Roadster as well. So I don't know. It's a lot to be appreciative of the product life cycle that we now see coming to the end there. In terms of the future, though, probably the most significant update, I think, on this call would have been the $20 billion in CapEx. As they said, they didn't even get to $9 billion this year, so that represents a pretty significant increase, more than doubling. And obviously, I think, caught investors by surprise. If you were watching the Tesla After Hours thing, right when that $20 billion number came out, that's when the stock started to taper off from some of the success it was having earlier. Obviously, it's still up, you know, almost 2% after hours, so it's recovered a bit, but I think it went from up 3 to basically flat very shortly following that comment. And that's just, you know, people having concerns about what was asked by one of the analysts there, is that how is that type of CapEx being covered? Because so far we've basically seen free cash flow, you know, just operating cash flow covering Tesla's capital expenditures, and then obviously leaving some to have free cash flow grow that cash balance even after capital expenditures. So the question there is, like, all right, if you increase this to $20 billion and you're not increasing, you know, significant increased cash flow from the business yet, as some of that may still be to come as Robotaxi expands and things like that, I think Tesla expects that to happen probably relatively quickly, especially based on Elon's comments about being in dozens of cities, 40% to 50% of the U.S. being covered by the end of the year, which he's made comments like that before, so it's really hard to know exactly what that timeline might look like. But point being that as that stuff happens, hopefully those cash flows should allow for CapEx for this, you know, this type of CapEx. But Tesla doesn't want to just sit around and wait. As Elon also said, like, there's so much change happening right now that it's almost imprudent to wait until that cash flow starts coming in to be comfortable going in this direction with the higher CapEx. If that CapEx is something that you feel like you can do efficiently, that needs to be done now. There's no point in just sitting around to wait for that, especially when you already have your cash on your balance sheet to be able to cover that. They didn't say this. Tesla's, you know, more than a $1 trillion company. Tesla could very easily raise capital if they needed to. I don't think that's at all part of their plan, but that's the, you know, one of the things that exists as a lever, especially when you have that type of a market cap. So, you know, that could be something that's an option as well, to cover those types of expenses beyond what operating cash flow would cover. So, as I've said many times, you know, Tesla's always gotten a very good return on their capital expenditures, maybe not like every single project, but looking at it holistically, that has always been the case. I would expect that to be, you know, continue to be the case. I think across Elon's businesses, that's pretty much always been the case. It's something he's just really, really been great at, and has led to a lot of the success from a lot of these businesses is really like that specific thing. So because of that track record, I think it's very easy to feel comfortable that, you know, if these dollars are going to be spent, they're going to be spent in a great way that's going to lead to really good return for shareholders in the future. So it's not anything that, you know, worries me or makes me want to sell my stock or anything like that. It's more something that I'm excited about, similar to like the R&D numbers that we had talked about. You know, and I don't mind those increasing quarter over quarter for very similar reasons, is that I believe in Tesla to get a good return on those expenses. So I think that part was interesting. And then they talked, you know, a fair amount about Robotaxi. I don't think we got anything, you know, major specifics on that. Obviously talked a lot about Optimus, with, you know, reiterating what we had seen in the earnings deck. Sounded like Elon said maybe unveiling in a few months. Earnings deck said unveiling in the first quarter. So I wouldn't be terribly surprised if that gets pushed to, you know, later in the year. Obviously, we'll just kind of wait and see on that. But at any rate, it is nice to see Elon make such positive comments about Optimus version 3, also echoed by some of the other members of the team there. And I think it's just something that we all can't wait to see. And until we do, it's a lot of speculation, but there's obviously a ton to be excited about there, and it feels like Tesla finally feels like it's ready to scale and are putting the plans in place like we had talked about around the SNX, to make that space available. Robotaxi fleet size, I was having a little bit of trouble hearing. I don't know if that was when the audio got quieter. That was on Tesla's end, by the way. Not sure what was going on there. Largely improved audio quality, but still some work to do. But at any rate, I thought they had said it's well over 500. I think the question had said that it's around 200 vehicles, which was more close to my understanding. I guess I haven't looked as closely at the Bay Area because a lot of that is still supervised, so it's a little bit less meaningful to me. But interesting to see that comment there. It also sounded like Ashok basically said that over even just like the last couple of days, it seems like they're getting quite a bit more comfortable with unsupervised. Elon mentioned specifically like they've done rides now without a chase car, which would be another significant milestone, another first for Tesla to have accomplished. So hopefully over the next quarter, we really start to see that, you know, take off. I think Elon said, you know, doubling every month is sort of what he expects in terms of the size of that fleet. If that's accurate, that doesn't take long to get to a point where it's like very eye-opening of like, oh, this is really starting to happen right now. Anything below like 1,000 vehicles, it's, you know, you kind of write it off as just a test. But as you get into multiple thousands of vehicles, that changes, and sounds like that change could be coming quickly. So as usual, it'll be another interesting quarter ahead as we see the progress there. As for FSD unsupervised, I mean, I understand why this keeps getting asked, but it's sort of a question that like we're going to know the answer to based on all of the other things that are happening with Robotaxi, right? Like that's going to be a subsequent thing to Robotaxi expansion. They're not going to just like flip the switch on unsupervised and then like still be testing Robotaxi. It doesn't make any sense. So like that will trail that and probably trail it by a fair amount because it's just a different level of liability to let a consumer in their car go and do that whenever they want versus Tesla in their fleet doing it with their cars that they, you know, have very close monitoring over. Not that they don't for the other cars, but it's just, I think, pretty obviously going to trail the Robotaxi. So, you know, really the question, more importantly and more answerable, is just what's happening with Robotaxi, and then after that, unsupervised will follow. So we'll see. I think, you know, Tesla wants to get that done as soon as they can. That's a huge value unlock, especially now as they're thinking about FSD in the context of subscriptions. That's what's going to drive the subscriptions, right? Elon is extremely aware that once you can take your attention away, that's where the true value starts to accrue. So, you know, Tesla wants it as bad as any individual customer does, I'm sure. I think those were the big things. I mean, otherwise, it seemed like a pretty straightforward call. I think they've basically reiterated a lot of things that we've talked about. Like even earlier today, we were talking about this exact point here of like we're transitioning from, and probably marked perfectly by the end of the SNX product lifecycle, we're transitioning from selling cars to selling transportation. And even I think among like Tesla people, like I don't think people have quite like gotten there yet. Like in their minds, people still think like selling a car, even with Cybercab, like people are thinking about that as like, can I buy the Cybercab? I don't know, maybe, probably. From like a business perspective though, it's just like, I think from Tesla's end, it's just like, all right, we'll sell it or we won't sell it. It will just be determined on the market dynamics. Like it has nothing to do with the design of the vehicle, whether or not we're going to sell it to customers or not. It's just like, we're going to build this thing to make transportation as efficient as we possibly can, autonomous transportation as efficient as we possibly can. Like that's a completely different design direction. This is the thing that Elon has wanted to build for a long time. Like that's what it's for. It's not to try to like shoehorn in also a consumer vehicle. If it happens to also be an awesome consumer vehicle, that's great, and Tesla can sell it and whatever. But the value, again, is from like having people be able to be transported at an extremely low cost in a really nice vehicle without having to pay attention, so you get your time back, not sitting in mind-numbing traffic, and then like all of the added safety stuff, which, you know, not really like a bonus, but make it as safe as possible, as cheap as possible. Like that's what Tesla is doing here. And when you think, it's first principles thinking, right? Like, design that thing, all the other stuff falls into place because that thing is the best thing. So that's what they're trying to say here. Hopefully people understand that. It should have been clear for a long time, but even again, among like the Tesla community, I feel like that's not like clicked fully yet. So hopefully that helps make that click. Plans to launch new models. Yeah, sort of like the same type of thing there. It's like they're not even really thinking about like, oh, we're going to build a new car to sell to customers. It's just, no, like, all right, what is the best possible system of transportation that we can develop, and how are we going to develop that? Like, those are the questions that Tesla is asking. Okay, let's see. The Terrafab stuff. So, I don't know. I feel like I had kind of hand-waved that a little bit more than I would now, maybe last quarter, when I think they first started mentioning that as an idea. It's almost like kind of if someone had talked about like Tesla needing to make batteries back in, I don't know, 2015, when they're selling like, I don't know, 100,000 Model S's and X's. Like at that time, it would have been like, oh, that's kind of crazy that Tesla would, like, no, you don't need to make your own batteries. But probably something that Tesla was thinking about at the time, and clearly fast forward a couple of years, certainly was thinking about at that point. So it kind of reminds me of that. And if Tesla does achieve what they hope to achieve, and basically these autonomous agents, real-world autonomous agents, whether it's a vehicle or an Optimus, whatever other product, if Tesla can actually deliver what they want to deliver, then they're just seeing like, all right, well, this is the bottleneck that we run into. How are we going to solve that? I guess we have to solve it because no one else is going to do it. And no one else is going to like put the capital behind it that isn't Tesla, because then those people are basically just like betting on Tesla. And that would be somewhat irresponsible for another company to do. They could do it. It's just generally not like how things work, especially when you're talking about like that type of scale, that type of CapEx. Like, it's just a massive, massive bet for another company to have to make, versus Tesla can make it because it's, you know, it's us. Like, we have control. We know what we want and how to get there and where this is all going, versus just like someone else having to tell you that and you just have to believe them. So it's a very different type of a situation that I can understand how it sort of results in that outcome. The counterpoints would be like, all right, just grow slower. It's fine. They'll get you your chips. Back on the other side of the coin then is like, all right, well, there's still, even in that type of a scenario, slower growth, you're still having tons of geopolitical risk that can complicate that, and not even complicate it, but sort of existential. So if that existential risk exists as well, and we can also hedge that while unlocking more growth, like, those are the arguments in favor. And everyone is aware that there are arguments against as well, and they acknowledge those things too. But it's just something that they need to, you know, make a calculation on and decide what path is best. And they're just mentioning like, hey, this is something that is in consideration at this moment. Not that a decision has been made, but something that they're evaluating. Yeah, I think the rest sounds like some of the ASP stuff that we were talking about, some of the margin strength this quarter was a result of mix. So suggests that margins outside of the United States are quite a bit stronger, which kind of makes sense in terms of, you know, production costs. And I think we did see cost decline, $1,600 from an average unit, you know, cost basis in the quarter, quarter over quarter. So, you know, that's probably largely mix driven too. If you have more of your vehicles being delivered in Asia Pacific, more of that production is going to come from Giga Shanghai. Giga Shanghai has a lower cost per vehicle produced, but ASP obviously a little bit lower too, but maybe not as low as the savings in cost. So that's probably something that's boosting up margins. It's almost something that you would hope to like kind of fall back if U.S. demand strengthens again, as we get through sort of like the hangover effect of that tax credit expiration and the pull forward of demand from that. So In terms of, you know, is that sustainable? I think it really depends on the mix. I think probably like the lower number of vehicle deliveries you have, the more sustainable that is, and the higher number of vehicles delivered, the less so, because you have some margin contraction as you have, you know, higher US sales. So I think that all kind of makes sense and is probably somewhat intuitive. Like when you grow your vehicle deliveries, you know, you're probably selling them at lower costs and into people that, you know, need that lower cost more, and that compresses your margin. You have the counterweight of that, of growing your economies of scale. So it's all something that Tesla has to balance and will balance, but it'll be interesting to see how that sort of unfolds throughout 2026. Just looking through the notes here. The solar stuff is interesting. I think probably learn a lot more about that throughout the course of this year. But yeah, let me know if there's anything else in particular you guys want me to discuss, or if you have questions or anything like that. But otherwise, I think, you know, pretty successful earnings report for Tesla. Obviously, that gross margin being well ahead of expectations, automotive revenue being ahead of expectations. The net income stuff we talked about, sounds like there's probably some stock-based compensation that wasn't fully appreciated in the estimates from starting to recognize some of Elon's CEO performance plan this quarter. So that drove down the GAAP earnings per share, but otherwise non-GAAP earnings per share beat. I need to go back and look at the digital currency impact. I think I was mixing up the directionality there, so I just need to like get my head straight on that. Again, the accounting has changed since I stopped doing Tesla Daily, so it's not something I have as great of insight on anymore. So I'll have to go back and take a look at that. But I think he said that there was a digital currency headwind, which would increase that spread non-GAAP to GAAP. So I just need to understand that. But that had been my assumption kind of going into it. So I think that hopefully that makes sense, which again means the numbers are stronger than expected on that non-GAAP basis. Which follows that the operating income and the gross profit both being higher than expected off of stronger revenue and stronger margins. So financially, I think very exciting. I think pretty cool to see like the disclosure of FSD subscriptions and things like that. I do want to go back and just look. Somebody pointed out that it looked like there was actually the FSD subscriptions both on a quarterly breakout basis, but then also on an annual broken out basis. So I just want to take a super quick look at that. Yeah, so that's really nice. So we get to see actual annual historical, you know, take rates and things like that. And just kind of looking at it now, I don't have a great way to pull this up on the screen at the moment. But in 2021, there was about, looks like 400,000 active FSD subscriptions, which at that point, obviously, there were no subscribing options. It would have just been outright purchases. And that would have been a little bit less than 20% of the fleet, it looks like. Yeah, maybe like single, somewhere in the teens range. Let's probably just calculate it instead of just poorly guessing. So about, let's see, as I look over my microphone here. Yeah, so about 17%, roughly, just, you know, not super precise with the numbers that were given, but about 17%. And that, obviously, that's now declined as we go up to 2025. So the active number of subscriptions has almost tripled since then, but the actual vehicle deliveries has maybe a little bit less than 4x'd, which means that that penetration is falling, which is a contradictory to something that I mentioned a little bit on our shareholder letter discussion today. If you look in more recent quarters, it's increasing over the longer time horizon. It's decreasing. The decrease, I suspect, would be because of the increased deliveries internationally, as obviously Giga Shanghai came up and started being such a huge portion of production and deliveries during that sort of four-year window that we're talking about here. So that really affects the numbers, but that's stabilized more recently. And then more recently, you're seeing an increase in the take rate, which is supporting what we're seeing, I think, with the product, that FSD is becoming more capable, just a better product that more people are going to want to subscribe to. And you also have new markets that are hopefully starting to take that on. Obviously, South Korea mentioned as one in the shareholder letter today. Let's see, just seeing if there's any questions here. Mosier, thanks for the super chat. Appreciate that. Question says, do you think it's odd how quiet they've been on V14.3, the last piece of the puzzle? Yeah, that would have been a good question, specific like to the reasoning capabilities. I don't know if it was Ashok or Elon that had commented on this on X, just basically saying that there's already some reasoning that's been implemented in the current versions. So FSD 14.2.2.4, I think, whatever the most recent one is. Some of that reasoning capability exists. I think they talked some of that being around like the parking decisions, where you have the option, of course, to select what type of parking situation you expect to be in. So I think he gave that as an example, and there would just be more of that type of stuff that would be happening. I don't know if it would be all like user input stuff. I'm sure that there would be other reasoning that the vehicle is kind of doing without input too, which is what I suspect would be the bigger piece of it and probably remaining piece of it. So whether or not I think it's odd how quiet they've been on that, I don't personally think it's odd necessarily. Some of it is just, you know, randomness of what questions happen to be asked and what happens to be answered and what happens to be being worked on that day and all of that sort of stuff. So I don't necessarily think it's odd. Obviously, though, it's something I'm still excited for. And I think, as Elon said, you know, probably a major update every 3-ish months, which is kind of the cadence that we've seen now for a long time and what I would expect. So, you know, once a quarter, I think we'll see something that's a pretty decent step up. And maybe they're not all the same every single quarter. Like, obviously, V12 to V13, huge. V13 to V14, huge. And that's not going to be something that's happening every quarter. But still, seeing that progress incrementally in between those major version updates. Let's see. What are your thoughts whether Tesla should / would consider licensing FSD? So this is something that Tesla has talked a lot about. I think they're super open to it. The problem is that no other company that's approached them basically is taking it seriously enough for it to matter to Tesla or to be interesting or worth the resources for Tesla. Because it needs to be something that this company is doing, you know, fully. You can't just like bolt this on, first of all, and then you also have to be doing it fully at scale. So you need to be willing to do it on a product line that's millions, you know, going to be millions of vehicles, not just this random, you know, your newest EV that you're going to produce 20,000 of and then give up on. Like, that's, Tesla has absolutely no interest in that, and they shouldn't, because it's not a good use of their time. So I think Tesla would be open to it, and I just think it's like a chicken and egg thing of like, it's probably can't happen because no one else is willing to make that type of commitment. And it's like an exemplary of why these automakers are going to be in the position that they're going to be in when we switch to this transportation as a service type of ecosystem and economy, which is, I don't know. I feel like people are just getting complacent and like, oh, it hasn't happened. Like, we're fine. But it's still happening and it's going to happen. So it's just going to make those problems worse when they come for those manufacturers. That's my opinion, but I mean, we'll see. All right, just keep looking through here. Some questions on like autopilot ending. I've kind of always had FSD, so I don't have a personal like great, I don't know, understanding of what the autopilot feature set exactly was and how that's changed over the years and how it compares to how it is now. So I can't really comment too much on that. I don't think it's surprising to see it like deprecated in favor of hopefully being replaced at some point with something else that kind of manages those capabilities. I think from what I've seen online, it seems like it's something that is maybe a little bit disappointing for people. I've seen people say that like this is crazy because now Tesla's not competitive with these, you know, other things. My point of view is like all of that stuff could be valid and are probably reasonable criticisms of Tesla. I don't want it to sound flippant that like they don't care about that, because those are real customers and they should definitely care about that. And again, I'm not clear on like if it's you had autopilot and it goes away, or if it's just not for new vehicles anymore. I need to probably brush up on that. But I think ultimately it's like most of that stuff fits into, at least from like an investment perspective or a business perspective, fits into like the noise category of this isn't something that's super material for the company or for the business. Obviously, if you have that car and it's affecting you in that way, like, yes, that is something that is significant for you. So that's just from the business perspective. And obviously supporting those customers is important, things like that. Beyond that, though, I don't really have like a ton of insight. I guess the hope that I would have is that that is replaced with something that is built off of the FSD stack that is a better part of the product. I also don't know, though, if Tesla wants to spend the time and the resources on developing something like that, because obviously it shouldn't be the priority when FSD unsupervised and robotaxi are the priority and should be. So it's, you know, a kind of a tough one to answer, you know, in that situation. All right, I think we got through a lot of the questions there. I'm just trying to think if there's kind of anything else that we missed today. I don't know. I think I kind of expected to come into this with it being a really boring report, and it didn't end up being boring. I think there were a lot of like new pieces of information that we got, particularly like the FSD subscriptions, the $20 billion in CapEx. But at a higher level, I think it sort of matched my expectations of being a little bit boring, in that we do know the direction of where the company is going. We know it's important, and those things are being developed very publicly, with the exception of Optimus being, you know, we'll see what that holds in the next few months, as Elon said, in terms of the unveiling. That's super important. But otherwise, like Robotaxi, there's tons of people following that. Like, we knew that it wasn't some like big announcement today that like, hey, we took unsupervised rides. We knew that the moment that it happened from updates on X. So I think there was probably a past where this would have been something like monumentous of like hearing that update on an earnings call, but it just isn't, because we already had that information, because Tesla's developing things so publicly. And I think that happens in a lot of parts of their business. A lot of the other stuff is very long lead time that's not going to change quarter to quarter. And then sort of the rest of it just fits into this category of supporting the future growth of the business through the current operations, which are important but are not where things are going to end up. So that's sort of what I expected. I think that's sort of how it's been, with a couple of exceptions there. Which I think are, I don't know, mostly positive, I would say. So at the end of the day, I think it's an earnings report that I'm happy with, and nice to see some of the financial strength a little bit better than expected by analysts, and kind of on to the next quarter, on to another 3 months of development for FSD, for Optimus. Hopefully we see Gen 3 before the next earnings call. So a lot to look forward to on those fronts. All right, so yeah, with that, I think it's a good place to wrap it up. But again, I appreciate you guys joining me for this once a quarter. It's always a blast to be here and to talk about Tesla, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do that, and I'll look forward to doing the same next quarter. Thank you.